Welcome to the Independent Advisors Podcast, where we dive into the world of stocks, tradable markets, and financial planning with Jessup Wealth Management's Chief Investment Officer, Mark McEvely, and CEO, Matt Jessup. You'll hear tips, tricks, and strategies to address your financial well-being, and most importantly, conveyed in a way that everyone can understand. Here are your hosts, Mark and Matt.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 247 of the Independent Advisors Podcast, where Matt Jessup and I, Mark McEvely, bring you everything you need to know from the past week in the world of financial markets and financial planning. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Mark. How you doing at the end of this week on a Friday?
Great. Even better that it's Masters week, so I have a lot of things to watch this weekend, which is exciting.
Day one is passed.
People still finishing up their rounds from yesterday due to weather this morning. Okay. So should be a good day and a good weekend.
Very good.
As always, we will quickly review the month-to-date and year-to-date performance of the major market indices that we track. This data is from YCharts and as of the market close on April 11th. S&P 500 index down 1.1% for the month, but still up 9% for the year. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down 3.4% for the month and up 2% for the year. The NASDAQ Composite Index up 0.4% for the month, up 9.5% for the year. The Russell 2000 Small Cap Index down 3.8% for the month, up only 0.8% for the year. And the Vanguard All World X United States ETF down 0.9% for the month and up 3.5% for the year. 3-month Treasury rate sitting at 5.45%, 2-year Treasury rate at 4.93%, and the 10-year Treasury rate at 4.56%. So it's been a while since we've seen the 2-year creeping closer and closer towards that 5% number, which could be a good or bad thing depending on how you look at it as an investor, but it's been a while since we've seen not longer term but longer than a year rates reach that 5% level.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing the economic data continue to remain strong. You're seeing inflation, though it's come down dramatically from a couple years ago. You know, we're kind of stuck in this 3-4% range per se, and the Fed likes it closer to 2, which could mean rates could be higher for longer. No surprise, I think you're seeing pressure of small caps with that type of news. Small caps tend to be more interest rate sensitive. Mm-hmm. But, you know, again, I go back to the podcast, was maybe about 6 weeks ago, where I made the comment with research, the longer the Fed holds rates and the slower pace of declines, when you look at history, tends to be good for risk assets.
Yeah.
So I would just kind of, for people who are listening to the podcast with a longer term perspective, I think you stay focused on that data point. My right. 2 cents.
Right. Moving on to big headlines, current events from the week. Q1 earnings season kicks off today with a handful of the large banks reporting this morning, such as JP Morgan, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and Citigroup.
I just saw JP. They killed it.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Great. What's the reaction so
Didn't
far?
Didn't look pre-market. At the pre-market. Okay. All I saw was the earnings result.
Well, yeah, so as always, banks kick off earnings season, typically the first couple of days, the first companies to report. So good news if JP Morgan had great results, but we'll see how the market reacts today. Moving on to tweets, articles, and research from this week. First thing I had was a tweet from Charlie Bilello on April 4th. And he says the S&P 500 fell 1.2% today, only the fourth daily decline of 1% or more this year. Since 1928, the average year has 29 of these declines. It's been an extremely mild year thus far. One should expect more volatility ahead. And Jenna will throw this up on the YouTube page and in our show notes, but it shows the number of large down days in the S&P 500 by year, you know, down 1%, 2%, or greater than 3% from 1928 to 2024.
Yep.
And as you'll see, is usually there's a lot of big down days throughout the year.
Yep.
And I just want to throw it out there. We haven't had that many. We've had some more recently. But again, we should expect in the future to have some pretty volatile days. And it doesn't mean that the market is going to crash. This is very normal, as you can see.
That's right.
You know, back in 2023, we had 28 large down days. And back in 2020, 45 large down days. And both of those years turned out to be fabulous years.
Yeah.
For the market.
Market's been doing great. You know, that's a very general statement, say the last 4 or 5 months. Just because that we might have some volatility, especially in that fourth year of the presidential election cycle, doesn't mean the market can't go higher from point A to point B. Just means that during that period, there might be some unsettling sell-offs where you're going to have the usual characters come out of the woodwork calling that this is the top. You're going to have a prolonged downturn. It's a good reminder, Mark, and I'm glad you're bringing it up. Invest for your time horizon, your goals and objectives, etc.
Yeah, yeah. Short term doesn't matter as much. Next thing I had was a tweet from Urien Timmer on April 2nd. So Jenna will throw this up on the YouTube page as well as in our show notes. He says, another way to visualize the cycle is to show it as a clock. If 12 o'clock is the start of the cycle compared to the longest cycles in history, it's only around 3 p.m. right now. Based on the average cycle, it's 6 p.m. Time is still on our side.
So I thought this was really cool.
I've never looked at cyclical bull markets in this way, but I think it could make a lot of sense for people. So, you know, I think one of the big questions everyone says is, well, how much longer do we have to go in this bull market before we get a sell-off? And comparing that relative to history, compared to the longest bull markets, and then compared to the average bull market, what Urien is saying is we're in very much so the beginning or in the middle of a bull market based on how you're looking at it. So either sure. way, there's a pretty good amount of time left on average until things take a turn for the worse. So I would tend to agree with him here. I mean, it wasn't that long ago where we had, you know, two pretty massive sell-offs. If you look back to 2022 and 2020.
Well said.
So this piece of research just makes sense to me, and I think is a good visualization. If you are a visual learner,
yes,
that this is displays a great illustration. How much time is left and should take some worry or stress off of your life.
And my comment again is, just because we're in a bull market doesn't mean you're not going to have corrections, mm-hmm. right? And I know I talked about it in the podcast maybe about 3 or 4 weeks ago about how many 1% sell-offs that you get in a year on average, how many 10% sell-offs you get in a year on average, etc. Those things are normal in a bull market. Mm-hmm. People don't go on the financial networks like, you know, what you would see like Fox Business, Bloomberg, CNBC. They don't talk about that side of the bull market. Mm-hmm. That's normal.
Well, yeah, and we really haven't had pain since, you know,
October,
July, end of July through October of
last year
in 2023, right? So yeah. Now we're getting to the point where that's, you know, 5.5 months behind us.
And anything you get is going to what? It's going to feel worse than it actually is.
Right.
You've said that before.
Right. So it really hasn't been that long. It's been, you know, about half a year, but people tend to forget pretty quickly.
You're spot on with that comment, though. It'll feel worse than it actually is because we've gone through a pretty lengthy period of and no real volatility.
Right. Right. Last thing I had was a article from Michael Fisher on Think Advisor titled Financial Health Planning Key Contributors to a Happy Retirement. And this was a survey. So he says, according to a survey sponsored by Mass Mutual, and again, not a massive fan of surveys, but I thought this was interesting. Survey by Mass Mutual of pre-retirees within 15 years of retirement and retirees who have been retired for no more than 15 years. 67% of retirees say they are happier in retirement than they were while they were working, with only 8% feeling less happy and the rest being about as happy as they were before. The happiest retirees tended to have prepared financially, for example, by paying off debt in advance of retirement and with regards to their health compared to those who reported being less happy, while also filling their free time with interactive and social activities, with less happy retirees being much more likely to report that retirement has made them lonely. 79% of retirees plan to travel in retirement, while 55% of retirees reported doing so currently. So I just thought this was interesting that I don't think, and some people might not agree with me, but I don't think retirement is all it's cracked up to be if you don't have a plan to continue to do something. And I'm not saying that's even a part-time job. I'm saying that's volunteering or watching your grandkids, sure, or being involved in social clubs or, you know, golfing or playing racquetball or whatever it is that you like to do.
A pickleball.
I think it's really important, and we've seen it in practice, Matt. It's important to stay active both physically and mentally.
There it is right there.
Because the age starts to catch up with you pretty quickly. If you think, hey, when I retire, I'm going to go home and sit on the couch for 10 hours a day, tends not to work out very well from a physical standpoint. And mentally, people are just less happy. So I think it's really important.
We see it boots on the ground in our practice.
And I think it's part of our jobs to make people aware of that and have that conversation. If it's not necessarily a dollars and cents conversation, more of a, hey, what are you planning to do in retirement? And a lot of times people are like, well, I haven't really thought of it. My only plan is not to work every single day from 8 to 5, right?
You're spot on.
And a lot of times people just don't create they've planned so much for this huge event in their life of them not working anymore that they get there and they're like, okay, I'm okay financially. But then it's like, what am I going to do now? Because in my experience with my clients retiring, people for the most part still want to have purpose in life. And I think it's important, just as how we all plan for retirement, it's really important to plan on what you're going to be spending your time doing in retirement as well.
Well said. I love that. I'm glad you highlighted that. I know you're not a big fan of surveys, but it facilitated,
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of surveys, but I do.
I think it's pretty clear to me and you
of how people act in retirement, depending on what they're doing or not doing. So
yeah, that's good. So I'll transition. I know we were talking a little bit at the beginning of the podcast. We were talking about, you know, volatility, and we were talking about people like trying to time the market a little bit. Remember that conversation? Mm-hmm. So I got a piece that's going to parallel that I think is going to facilitate a little bit of a roundtable between you and me. This is a piece by Seth Goldenmark on April 8th. And what Seth was highlighting is a friend of the podcast. He was highlighting a piece of research from J.P. Morgan that's dated March 28th. So I'm going to read what his ex post said, and then we'll have Jenna put up the chart for our YouTube viewers. This will, of course, be in our traditional show notes and all of our social media for our traditional podcast listeners. This is going to be a chart that's titled The Tortoise and the Hare. And this is what Seth wrote. J.P. Morgan strategist said, no AI profits for you. He says, we calculated investors' losses for 2,300 U.S. ETFs based upon the timing of investor inflows and outflows. The innovation ETF basket that they designed, and I'll talk about it in a second, lost $7.1 billion, with a B, of investor capital through December of 2023, more than any other long ETF. Now, Jenna's going to put up this chart for our YouTube viewers. What you're going to see on this chart, and I'll verbalize for our traditional podcast listeners, is a multi-sector innovative ETF that J.P. Morgan created. And the subcomponents, Mark, would be things such as cloud computing, digital media, e-commerce, gene therapy, blockchain, peer-to-peer, metaverse, hydrogen. And the chart goes back to 2017. Mm-hmm. That, in comparison, is going to show the tortoise, which is the old economy. That basket they made up, Mark, is farm equipment, industrial REITs, office cleaning supplies and uniforms, S&P sub-industry groups is exactly what it says. Now, you know, my only critique of this is, the old economy seems a little cherry picked. Like I could, you know, come up with a couple things in the old economy that might be more representative of that. Mm-hmm. But the message for me, though, is very clear. people tend to, you know, buy into the fad when it's really hot. So these are my prepared remarks. Why am I highlighting this topic? FOMO, or the fear of missing out, is a real thing. And people tend to buy things with the wrong time horizon in mind. They purchase something not because of a long-term investment thesis, Mark, but rather this sector, this stock, etc., is moving and I don't want to miss out. Once any sort of correction comes, the investment thesis wasn't long-term. Remember, I said that. And you have capitulation selling because the short-term investment horizon causes the phenomenon you see on this chart that Seth illustrated, which is buying high and selling low. Have you seen great gains in these areas over the past 12 months or so? Yes. But look at where a lot of these stocks were prior to 2021. There are a few outliers like AI-related names hitting all-time highs, but not everything in the innovation bucket is. So my message: have realistic expectations of your investment time horizon. Trying to time things on a short-term basis is very hard to do, especially if your friend's talking about a hot stock or an investment tip. Mark, you get a lot of insights on this. You're a CIO. You know, what's your kind of two cents on this, sir?
Yeah, I think to help people better understand this is kind of to think about this in the way of, you know, people's own personal spending, right? So one of my faults that I have is I'm a gadgets guy, right? Mm-hmm. I like to tinker with gadgets or buy the coolest new gadget out there, right? Yeah. And that's kind of what happened in my opinion in 2020. These, you know, cloud stocks, the digital media stocks, e-commerce. When COVID hit, it was like, okay, this is how the world is going to be going forward. Mm-hmm. And I want to get a piece of that, right?
Yep.
So it feels really good at first, especially when you buy something new and you're really excited to use it. I know a lot of people, I haven't gotten it yet, but the Apple Vision Pro, for example, people are like, oh, as soon as that comes out, I'm buying it and I'm going to use it all the time. Well, over time, that stuff starts to lose its luster a little bit, right?
Well,
and once you start using it, you're like, okay, I've used it. It's fun. It's great. But, you know, it's not as good as it was when you hit that buy button online, right?
Yep.
And it's kind of the same thing, in my opinion, with a lot of, you know, with this innovation ETF, where people get overly excited at first because they don't want to miss out, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
But then they're like, okay, well, COVID's kind of behind us now, and it's really not going to change too much going forward. Obviously, there's some additional technology and ways of life that we're still adapting to after COVID. But from before COVID until now, other than utilizing technology a little bit more, using video conferences a little bit more, at least life for us is kind of the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just like things you buy lose its luster, stocks you buy can lose its luster too, especially if they're not making any money, right? And that's a lot of what we saw in 2020 is these stocks were getting bid up so high and they weren't profitable yet.
You could have all the hype and euphoria you want in the world, but guess what? At the end of the day, you can only burn through so much cash and raise so much cash before investors are going to demand a return on their money.
So once you kind of come back down to reality, it's like, okay, you know, this isn't something that's the next thing that's going to completely change the world and going to be the next, you know, Apple or Amazon, for example. Those companies are very few and far between. So that's kind of how I think about that type of stuff, because obviously what we saw in 2020, 2021 to a certain extent was not sustainable. And you saw this massive pullback and come down to reality.
You just witnessed, everybody, a TED Talk by Mark McEvely. That was wonderful.
I appreciate it.
It was great. Impromptu TED Talk by Mark. I had nothing else to add.
Great. Let's move on.
Nailed it. All right. My next two things is in regards to some Jamie Dimon headlines. Okay. So for those that don't recognize that name, Jamie Dimon is the longtime CEO of JP Morgan Chase, which is not only one of our nation's largest banks, but one of the largest banks in the entire world. And I got a couple of things I'm going to highlight. I'm not negative or positive per se on Jamie Dimon. There's just a couple things I think I want to highlight and have a roundtable on. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give him some knocks. I'm going to give him some kudos.
Okay.
To give you a preview. Okay. So let's start with some of the knocks per se. So I want to talk about some of the headlines recently that are definitely getting some attention. So I got a couple different things that Jenna might put up for our YouTube viewers, but I can easily verbalize this stuff for our traditional podcast listeners. There's no charts here. So the first is what's getting a lot of headlines about a week ago, around April 8th-ish, is, quote, interest rates could hit 8% or more, and wars are creating outsized geopolitical risks, Jamie Dimon warns. So you see that headline, okay? Big bold letters, okay? You know, Seth Golden had a piece he put on April 8th, and this is what Seth said. Seth's like, 2021, Jamie Dimon, economic and crypto warning. 2022, Jamie Dimon, economic warning. 2023, Jamie Dimon, economic warning. 2024, Jamie Dimon, economic warning. I'm sensing a pattern. Then you got our friend of the podcast, JC Peretz. He's been on the podcast before. This is what he said on April 8th. Jamie Dimon works for JP Morgan shareholders. He is not in the business of helping mom and pop investors. He is only in the business of making money for the shareholders who he works for, and he should. So not sure why individual investors would care or trust what he has to say.
I don't think you could have said it any better than that. I mean, that's what corporate America is, right? That's what the stock market is. These people employed by these major companies, especially these major banks, they're trying to increase shareholder value. They work for the shareholders, right?
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, people who look at Jamie Dimon kind of like a god almost for advice about where the economy is going, he doesn't get paid to do that.
Mm-mm.
Right? So there's no incentive for him to be right or wrong. There is incentive for him to make news headlines, but it doesn't matter if he's right or wrong because he's not working for individual investors, right?
I would argue he is incentivized to talk his book.
Yeah. And if I were him too, I'd talk crap about crypto as well, because that's a threat to his business, right?
That's right. And so for maybe people that aren't as attuned to that Wall Street saying of talking your book, what it means is that you're reflecting a viewpoint that justifies your business or investment decisions. Mm-hmm. Okay. So my takeaway is going to parallel almost exactly what you said. And this is what my prepared remarks were for our listeners and viewers. We have to understand the economic interest, which is JP Morgan shareholders. I don't dislike him as an individual, and I think he's spot on in the importance of AI, which I'll get to in a second, will have on the economy in the future. But here it is. If you would have applied his economic outlook in recent history, you wouldn't have liked the results. Mm-hmm. Invest for your time horizon, your goals and objectives. Dimon runs one of the biggest banks in the world, which is conservatively managed, in my opinion, compared to others. His views will obviously reflect the bank's positioning in the marketplace. You can't go out and be really bullish when the business footprint of the company you run is one that's more conservatively run compared to your competition. That wouldn't make sense, right? That falls into the camp of talking your book. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to give him some credit. I want to talk about his comments in his annual shareholder letter regarding AI. And this was a ex post I saw by QF Research. It's a large PM in a large institution. This was posted, Mark, on April 8th. And I'm just going to read some of the snippet of this. He attached a piece from Bloomberg, this QF Research did. And I'm going to quote now. JP Morgan, Chief Executive Officer Jamie Dimon, said artificial intelligence may be the biggest issue his bank is grappling with, likened its potential impact to that of the steam engine, and said that technology could augment virtually every job. The CEO devoted a chunk of his annual shareholder letter to the importance of AI for Wall Street giants' business and for society at large. The bank has identified more than 400 use cases of technology across marketing, fraud, risk, amassed thousands of AI experts and data scientists, and begun exploring deploying generative AI. So, you know, I think at the end of the day, his last quote I'll say is, "We are completely convinced the consequences will be extraordinary and possibly as transformative as some of the major technological inventions of the past several hundred years. Think of things like the printing press, the steam engine, electricity, etc." So I'm on the camp to where it's hard in the early stages to really quantify how disruptive, innovative, use the term that you want, that AI will end up being 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road. I just want to throw it out there that I agree with that it's going to be very disruptive. And it is something that I think not only investors, but business leaders are going to continue to monitor. Your comments.
Yeah, I think so too. I think now more than ever, there's, you know, a concern that, you know, there's going to be huge job loss and AI is going to be doing, you know, 85% of the jobs in the country today. And I don't want to say this time's not different, but if you think back to all of the technological advances we've seen over the past 100 years, there's always been a major concern about job loss.
Well said.
And what happens is people just readjust to whatever the technology is or the innovation is, and they're doing something else. And I think it's going to be a similar thing with AI, and it sounds scary, and I don't want to belittle that point, but this isn't the first time we've had technology threaten to take over jobs.
Well,
and we've talked about that. We've had a few pieces on the podcast before and have talked about that.
Could it increase?
I think it's going to transform businesses and productivity for the better.
Yep. I think it could increase productivity. You know, could XYZ company get along, say, with 20 or 30% less of a workforce potentially down the road? Potentially, yes. But is it going to completely eliminate jobs? No. And my analogy would be, you know, in the early and mid 90s, as you started to see a lot more robotics and or auto manufacturing, you know, a lot of the unions were like, okay, in the next decade, we're not going to have any of our workers on the line. And look at where that's at today. That's not true.
Right.
Now, will you continue to see advances? Absolutely. But, you know, to go from where we're at today to 5 years from now, it's going to take time. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like my analogy is autonomous driving. You know, in the early, like around 2010, 2011, we were told by 2015 to 2017 that there would be completely full autonomous driving, and we're still not there. Mm-hmm. And so this stuff is going to take time to perfect. But again, doesn't mean it's not going to increase productivity, increase margins, and companies might be able to get along with a little bit less workers, but it's not going to completely eliminate.
Right.
As it stands today, and we'll see how it innovates over time.
For me, it's viewed as just another tool, another technological tool to use to help you make better business decisions, to help you be more productive, be more efficient, be more effective in what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think the more life concerning, the more important things, you're still going to want at least obviously a human element involved with those types of things, monitoring or actually doing with the assistance of, et cetera. You know, big topic for as time goes on. My main reason again for picking this is that, yeah, I'm going to knock him on some of his consistently dire predictions. You know, if you keep saying that year in, year out, as Seth was kind of indicating, a broke clock is right 2 times a day. And so at some point he's going to be like, oh, Jamie Dimon nailed it. But it's like at a certain point, you know, you can't keep doing that. And I understand why he does it. But then on the other side, I agree with some of his comments on AI. So I'm not completely negative on Mr. Dimon. But, you know, there's times we just got to recognize he has talk in his book.
Yeah, for sure. Great point. Well, I think that's everything we have for this week, Matt. Anything else before we sign off for the week?
Get deeper and deeper here into earnings season. So I know you'll see some volatility. I did check JP Morgan as our example. Not a recommendation for or against the individual name pre-market. Even though they killed earnings, it's down pre-market.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. How much?
I think I saw 3%.
Okay. We'll see how the rest of the day goes. But thanks everyone for tuning in to this episode of the Independent Advisors Podcast. We will be back with you next week.
See you next week, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Independent Advisors Podcast. If you're interested in hearing more, hit the subscribe button so you can be notified every time a new episode gets released. Feel free to share with friends, family, and follow us on Twitter at Jessup Wealth, Facebook, and LinkedIn. Mark and Matt will continue to share beneficial information on these social media sites. Also, check out the podcast tab on their website. That's www.jessupwealthmanagement.com. There you'll find links to every episode of the Independent Advisors. Have questions or topics you want to discuss on the show? Message us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or send an email with the words questions and topics in the subject line to inquiries@jessupwealthmanagement.com. We'll talk about it right here on the podcast. Certain sections of this commentary may contain forward-looking statements based on reasonable expectations, estimates, projections, and assumptions. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of future performance and involve certain risks and uncertainties, which are difficult to predict. All indices are unmanaged and are not available for direct investment by the public. Past performance is not indicative of future results. This podcast is provided for general informational purposes only and does not constitute either tax, legal, or financial advice. Although we do go to great lengths to make sure our information is accurate and useful, we recommend you consult a tax preparer, professional tax advisor, financial advisor, or lawyer regarding your specific circumstances. Investing involves risk, including the loss of principal. No strategy can guarantee any objective or goal will be achieved.